Hello, everyone. Thank you for watching another episode of The Naturalist Capitalist. This is the 10th episode of The Four Horsemen. We did our first one in March. We've done one every month. We've only had one taken down so far. I'm sure that's not going to remain true. We'll see if this one ends up staying up. But I just wanted to thank everyone for subscribing to the show and keeping with us through all this. I'm going to plug my friend Will Bell's Blueberry Wine, Rabbit Eye Wine. You can go find that online. Great stuff. Anyways, let's get right into it. We've got Eric Jackman on the show again tonight. As usual, how you doing tonight, Eric?
Count them, bitches. 5 + 5 = 10. Okay, as in the 10 pussies I grabbed at Studio 54 last night. But doing well, Reed. I got my Trump shirt here for everyone just to get into the holidays and to celebrate Ghislaine's trial. So that's for everyone. And we're excited.
Absolutely.
We're excited. Right. Happy to be here.
As always, we've got Ryan Dawson on the show again. So Ryan, your name, Assange, didn't kill himself. Who is going to kill themselves first, Assange or Ghislaine Maxwell? What's your prediction?
Oh, I Assange, but I don't have an epic shirt like Eric, but this one's pretty good and all aid to Israel.
Just as good.
Bombs on it.
Well, that's an anti-Semitic one worth getting you kicked out of a t-shirt store.
Oh, I'm the anti-Semite of the week. Did you hear? I'm tied with Mia Khalifa, some Lebanese porn star. Of course, I'm not anti-Semitic. That's just what you say to anybody that criticizes Israel.
So our special guest tonight, this is really exciting. We tried this one other time and we just didn't end up making it work. But we've got Mike Rivero from the What Really Happened radio show. How are you doing tonight, Mike?
I'm doing fine. Thanks an awful lot for having me.
Absolutely. So since you haven't been on the show before, why don't you just give us a little bit of an introduction as to what it is you've done over the years and how many times you've been canceled? And
well, I've done a lot over the years, and thankfully the statute of limitations has expired on most of it. I started working in alternative media back in 1994, and I never expected this was going to become like a full-time career. I was working in the film industry in visual effects and animation, and the story came out about Vince Foster, the deputy White House counsel in the Clinton White House, being found dead in Fort Marcy Park. And they had this photo that the White House had leaked to Reuters, supposedly showing the gun next to Foster's hand. My business was knowing what makes things look real or not on, you know, movies and TV. And I looked at the photo. I said, this is a stage shot. No question. And I started asking a few questions around, and the next thing I knew, I'd been blacklisted out of Hollywood. Nobody wanted to talk to me anymore. And since I suddenly had a lot of free time on my hand, I started digging into Vince Foster and a bunch of other issues of the day. And that led to creating my first political website, which was called Rancho Runamucca. And then years later, we renamed it to whatreallyhappened.com. But we have been running this now for, you know, 28 years.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. And how many people have tried to cancel you? Where do they mostly come from? They mostly come from the left or the establishment or both?
Well, mostly from the left, mostly from Israel. I am absolutely banned from Facebook. Every time I log in there, they say there's a temporary problem with your account, but it's been saying that for about 18 months now. I got my channel shut down at YouTube. PayPal canceled my account just 2 weeks ago, which is causing all kinds of headaches. I have a GoFundMe set up at the top of my webpage, whatreallyhappened.com. And plus the usual assortment of, threats, bodily harm, and so forth and so on.
Yeah. Well, everyone, I've got his link to his website. So go check out his GoFundMe there so he can help him out for losing his PayPal. Did you pay attention a lot to the Epstein Maxwell case before it became public knowledge?
I was paying attention to it back when Jeff Epstein was still alive, because to me it was obvious he was running a honey trap operation to basically tape record, video record powerful politicians and corporate leaders with underage girls, which makes the blackmail that much more effective. And you know, it was pretty obvious from the wrist slap he got down in Florida that he was somebody's intelligence asset. And we know, of course, Ghislaine Maxwell's father, Robert, was a Mossad agent. And so it's entirely possible Epstein was collecting all this blackmail information for Israel, or may have been shared also with CIA or FBI. In the wake of his death, we know that his little island home in the Caribbean was literally cleaned out of all the video equipment, computers, and so forth. The big question is, who has that information right now, and are they using it to control our government?
Yeah. Mike was one of the few people publishing my stories about Epstein. I would always go to whatreallyhappened.com, and very few sites, almost nobody was touching this story until he got rearrested in 2019. Mm-hmm. And then it only was when they thought it went to Trump through Acosta. And as soon as it didn't, they all completely lost interest in it. But as far as the Israel connection, you have, obviously, the Maxwell family are all criminals, all of them. Yep. All of them, not just Robert Maxwell. The two sons are involved in defrauding trust, and the girls, they're all crooks. But, you know, they were given money through Wexner to Ehud Barak, the prime minister of Israel, who's visiting Epstein. Was also formerly high up in level in intelligence. And then the fact that Les Wexner from the mega donors is the backbone that gave him a base of operations and was engaging in the rapey rape with them. And they probably murdered Shapiro back in the 90s. Like, a lot of Wexner's lawyers end up dead. Mm-hmm. You'll find one dead in 95, one dead in 97. And Jeffrey Epstein is working. He's always on the board. He's always the vice chairman, a trustee of different Wexner properties and different Wexner assets. And he helped move money around for him and stuff. So this is how Israeli intelligence works. It gets the S&M inside the Bronfmans, the Steinhardts, the Wexners, the backbone, that sort of second generation of the Sunborn Institute that helped steal nuclear weapons from the United States and smuggle guns, are now into human trafficking. And, you know, when you've got this many billionaires, that's why they limited it all to just the sexual escapades, which is definitely a crime and a story. But larger than that is the spy operation on science and technology in particular. So,
well, the Promise software is a big piece. Maxwell was a big guy. Wasn't he a salesman of that, essentially, or spamming that around?
Yeah, their family helped steal that, which created the NSO software, which was used to track down and kill Khashoggi, for example. And the Jamal Khashoggi, the Khashoggi family's also got some, this is YouTube, how can I say this? They would go on cruises on boats and Peter Nygaard their way with women, in cages and things. So, yes. And, you know, Nygaard should be on that map too. He, for those who don't know, but I mean, I think all of us do, but in the Bahamas for decades was abusing women and children, and he would do it. He would just drug them Jean-Luc Brunel style and then R-word them. And he also got visits from Prince Andrew. Prince Andrew actually cut a vacation short to hang out with Peter Nygaard. Now, Peter Nygaard's like 79 or 80 now. Prince Andrew was, I think, in his upper 60s. Like, what are you doing hanging out with some 80-year-old guy in the Bahamas instead of with your wife and kids? Like, but you know, that's why on the calendar I called Prince Andrew the Kevin Bacon of rape rings. Oh, shoot, I said the word.
I think we're all right with that one. I mean, yeah, they can take us down for anything they want. So,
the fact that me and Mike Rivero are here, you're going to get canceled. Like,
ultra based.
Saying? I also lost PayPal twice. They even canceled my wife's PayPal. I lost Patreon. I can't even do GoFundMe. They kicked me off of GoFundMe and Kickstarter. Yeah, no. it's the Israelis and the woke left. It's like a 1-2 combo, because the Israelis will just kvetch about anti-Semitism or whatever, racism, some canard. And the woke left is on such a witch hunt to find, you know, a neo-Nazi or whatever, that it doesn't matter how ridiculous it is. Accusation alone gets them all riled up. And they're like, racist! They're almost about to come on themselves to find a witch to burn. And so it's sort of both. Like, the left is the one that actually does it, but it's the Israelis that
I don't know if Mike or Ryan could speak this, but a lot of people wanted me to give them information about the New Mexico angle of Epstein's whole thing. I know Bill Richardson's name comes up sometimes. If one of you guys know more about that or what that was all about, the Zorro Ranch.
Well, they had him compromised, and that state also, the age of consent was 17, so it allowed, it opened the door a lot more for them. You know, that was a whole, an extra year. But they had him, the zoning laws and stuff on that property were completely illegal, and they suddenly changed just for Epstein. So he was kind of creating an island in New Mexico because there's nothing around that ranch, right? He had privacy. And it goes pretty deep down under, too. But, I mean, he eventually ended up with two different islands. So, but, you know, when you got the governor compromised, you got your own property. And they didn't, that one, too, was cleaned out. Really, only the property they searched was the one in New York.
Right.
Because the one in Paris was last. It was like 3.5 months later. They opened the door. There's nothing in there.
Right.
But we do know that they were sending industrial shredders and things out to these places. And, you know, and there was property in Ohio too that wasn't his, but was his because it was Wexler's, and they did their little shenanigans over there. That's where Mr. Dershowitz didn't do anything wrong because he had his underwear on. You can find videos 6, 7, 8 years old talking about Dershowitz kitty fiddling, and he actually wrote a piece. I don't remember if it was for Penthouse or Playboy, one of those kind of magazines, trying to justify child pornography. And he goes on and like, there's, it doesn't do anything, any harm, whatever, to just look at it, 'cause you're not actually touching them, whatever. And I'm thinking, what about the child in the pictures?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's so narcissistic. He can't like put himself like about the others. Like, but I'm not actually touching the child. He's a fucking goblin. But yeah. What about the kid? Duh. No, that doesn't register for these people. He also said Sirhan Sirhan was the first act of Islamic terrorism. Sirhan Sirhan was a Christian. And that whole story is not what it seems anyway. So,
So, Mike, I got a question for you. I know Ryan believes this, and I think all three of us do, that QAnon was a CIA psyop, basically, to...
It was somebody's propaganda operation. I'm not convinced it was solely CIA. But yeah, I remember when they first appeared, I was getting flooded with emails saying, you got to put this on your website. You got to put that on your website. And that's usually a red flag that somebody's trying to feed you something.
Mm-hmm. As soon as they said Israel's last, it was like trusted plan Israel's last, which means never, because how it could be last in infinite number of stories, right? I say, okay, let's see who's behind this.
Yeah. I mean,
but I don't know. I think it was just at first, just your run-of-the-mill Jonestown idiots doing it on their own. Like that had been around a long time. Like it got worse and worse, though. Yeah. But I think this is what happens when there's so much censorship that people rightly are skeptical of what's on TV. I mean, all they ever do is lie to you. Mm-hmm. And they would seek out social media to try to find something more reasonable. But because reasonable voices like mine, like Mike's, are banned, that leaves a void, and the charlatans come in and, you know, wrap it all up in a bow. They get promoted, you know, like the airplane deniers of 9/11 that say a missile hit the Pentagon will get millions of views, and that's allowed on YouTube. You say something sensible and you're gone. And so over time, it all goes that direction. It's the same way they got more than, what is it, 50, 60 genders now, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. No reasonable person. It's like there's male and female. It's bimodal. They're hermaphrodites sometimes, but it's, you know, 99.99% male, female. That's it. You can't just identify a sex. It's biological, not ideological. But they've made that a thing by censoring all the voices and letting a tiny minority be the only one that's allowed to talk.
Yes.
That's kind of what happened with Q. Like, it doesn't matter how ridiculous it is because they're allowed to talk and you're not. And so it grows and grows.
Well, the other thing is with like QAnon, I mean, I don't know nearly as much about Epstein as like you do, but I know more than the average person. So I've just been trying to give them a baseline education on what was going on. And you just start talking about it and they're like, oh, this is QAnon, you know? And it's like, no, it's not QAnon. And they've already poisoned the water by putting QAnon out there and, you know.
That's the Watkins, exactly, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those Watkins guys out there are, you know, they run the message board and it's basically, you know, it's, I think it's a combination of the Watkins father and son, Steve Bannon, Flynn, all of the media ecosystems that popped up around all of those figures. They're really the ones that all really boosted it and kept it going and fed into it. And, you know, people around Trump. So yeah, I think the thing was just a massive psyop.
Well, they leave some cookie crumbs because I would get stuff plagiarized that they would add ridiculous to. So they'd be, and then they'd be like, Ryan Dawson says this. I'm like, no, I don't. But I had like an old map they used. They took my name off. And then they would add all this crap and be like, oh, he's still alive and living in Israel and blah, blah, blah. And you would always see, and you'd see the same stuff with the 9/11 kooks that would, they're all anti-Israel. And they're like, oh, yeah. They even at one point said, the Mossad did Sandy Hook or something like that. I'm like, no, he didn't. And so we see all this, what they're doing is they say ridiculous stuff and then they're anti-Israel because they want the anti-Israel camp to see, appear like, look, we're just a bunch of kooks. And now whose interest is that? Is that the CIA or is that somebody else? Now it can still be CIA because they're just as cucked to Israel as anybody else.
Yeah, but, true.
You know, and they're compromised. Look at the sex scandals with the CIA and the kiddie fiddle. They're almost as bad as CNN.
Yes.
So, Mike, what are you working on right now for research? What kind of, where's your attention drawn and what are kind of the big things that you're digging into right now?
Well, I'm keeping a very close eye on the evolving situation in Ukraine. There's a lot of conflicting statements coming out from the White House, from Ukraine, from Russia. And there's clearly, I'm getting the sense that there is a faction fight between those who really want to get into a major war with Russia and another faction, which is saying, you know, this is not really a very good idea. But if you look at history, every time the government screws up the economy of this country, they get into a major war to distract from it and try and fix it. Crash of 1907, World War I, crash of 1929, World War II, crash of 2008, and off we go again. And if we can't handle Afghanistan, we are certainly not going to be able to take on Russia or China or worst case have to deal with both of them at the same time.
Yeah, no kidding. So do you think that the...
Yeah, that was Raimondo's last prediction, by the way. Justin Raimondo was saying the next big theater of war is going to be in Ukraine. And he was usually right about these things, unfortunately. But I mean, it's fortunate that he's right. It's a dire situation, though, but... I thought they were just saber rattling to get the NDAA passed, which they did, but they're still talking about it. That's already done. So, you know, you think, can anyone be that crazy?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I can't.
Do you have to ask that in today's clown world, right? can anyone be crazy enough to go to war with Russia?
I don't know. I mean, I can see a proxy war of some sort, but direct hot war with Russia. Like, is anyone, I mean, who is that guy? Who is the Republican on TV saying that? What was his name?
The senator there from Missouri. Yeah, Tulsi was talking about him. That guy is a complete clown. Like saying we gotta flex with the nuclear option, and that needs to be put right on the table, front and center. So, I mean, how can we de-escalate the situation, Mike? I mean, what do you think would be a good remedy to this?
Well, we have to get everybody talking to each other, which is more difficult because the U.S. and Russia are still playing tit for tat with diplomatic expulsions. There are some very crazy people involved in the decision making, and we need saner heads to come forward. But, you know, throughout history, anytime somebody starts a war, it's always with the expectation that they're going to win. Of course, half the time they're wrong. And I think they're wrong this time. I don't think the United States can take on Russia or China. We don't have the manpower. We don't have the money. We don't have the manufacturing. And we certainly don't have the moral right to be going into these wars. And it's going to be a disaster. We're going to lose this one. And somewhere between starting this war and realizing it cannot be won conventionally, they'll start turning those little brass keys in the missile silos.
Yeah, I saw Adam Fitzgerald tweet something out today about how hypocritical it is for us to be upset about China sending warships out when we have 800 military bases all around the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we put our ships and our planes right up as far as we can against Russia. If they started doing that to us, like how we would act.
Yeah, we don't see China sailing along the coast of California. We don't have Russian warships in the Gulf of Mexico. It's very obvious to anybody who's watching the situation who the real aggressor is in this situation.
Yeah, definitely.
How did our oil get under their sand?
How did Israel's oil get under their sand, you mean, right, Ryan?
Well, yeah, that's the our part. Yeah. You know, so we just pay for it all.
Yeah.
Look at the South Ossetia incident, right? Where they're like, oh, will they really come in? Your Russia slapped that down right away, right? Mm-hmm. They went in. That was scary in Georgia. I mean, you had the Russian military mobilized over that. You don't think they will in Ukraine? That's a much bigger prize. That's their access to the Mediterranean. That's everything.
Yeah.
And we are all breaking all our promises about NATO. Like, the Soviet Union's gone. What are we doing with NATO? We're not going to expand it. It's done nothing but expand, right? And, you know, nobody wants the Gaddafi treatment. You can't reason with a country that's just, when you're talking to people like Victoria Nuland, mm-hmm. you know, oh, we got to protect democracy in Ukraine. She was part of the coup of Ukraine on yes. tape talking about which oligarch to install, right? Biden's on tape talking to Poroshenko about his quid pro quo. And they impeached Trump for that, but Biden and Hunter were guilty of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Nuland and Kagan, it's like the neocon 2.0. And if people remember the second Iraq war, a group of crazies, right? The Office of Special Plan that really way out there, people like Doug Feith and Richard Perle, and they orchestrated a bunch of lies, and they had willing participants in the New York Times and CNN and Fox to reiterate their lies. And then even after the fact, when there were no WMDs, when Saddam did not have anthrax or yellow cake uranium, they did not have any bombs under the palaces, William Sapphire was wrong on everything, Judith Miller was wrong on everything, the Kagan's Weekly Stand, they're all wrong on everything. They get jobs at Fox mm-hmm. or somewhere else. They got promoted rather than demoted after they lied and were wrong on everything they said. And we did go to war with Iraq over nothing because the dimwits and midwits thought Saddam did 9/11 or something, which is as ridiculous as like bombing Korea after Pearl Harbor. I mean, that should even be like bombing Mexico after Pearl Harbor. That's how far away it was. Yeah.
So speaking of
first shots at Pearl Harbor were by the U.S. sank a Japanese sub. The USS Ward fired on a sub and sank it an hour before the attack.
So. When I was still living in Hawaii, the oceanographers at the University of Hawaii actually found that sub.
Yeah, it was off the Philippines. It got hit by a kamikaze.
No. I'm talking about the submarine that the Ward sunk. Yeah. They finally found that one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's a minute sub. I didn't know they'd found that.
Yeah.
So this was a Japanese sub that our forces sunk?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of, I think there were five miniature submarines that were carried in by a larger sub, and they tried to sneak into Pearl Harbor to cause a great deal of damage, and the USS Ward spotted one of them and fired on it, hitting the conning tower, and it sunk. There is photographic evidence that there may have been one of the other miniature submarines in Pearl Harbor during the attack, but it's never been found.
This is why I love this guy. Any little historical fact he just adds on.
Nobody wants to go digging in the bottom of Pearl Harbor because they're still finding torpedoes down there.
Mike's down there in scuba gear, you know, looking around.
We found a cluster bomb shell in Osaka a few years ago. Like they still find World War II munitions all over Japan.
Yeah.
So, Mike, the 80th anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor was last week.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us what really happened with the whole Pearl Harbor fiasco? How much did we really know and pretend that we didn't know?
Well, FDR basically was pushing for this war for the entire year before the Japanese attack. He was following an 8-step plan by Office of Naval Intelligence Lieutenant Commander Arthur H. McCollum. Now, McCollum had lived in Hawaii for a while, had become very entrenched in the Japanese community, and he knew what it would take to basically anger them. So he wrote up this list of 8 steps things that would, to the American sensibilities, would seem kind of minor, but to Japanese sensibilities would be horrible insults. And over the course of 1941, Roosevelt carried out these provocations leading to the attack. One of the things he did was he moved the Pacific Fleet from San Diego to Pearl Harbor, which was not really a defensible harbor. Right. And a lot of the Navy brass said, why are you doing that? They're going to be sitting ducks out there. And one of the things that we discovered when we were living on Oahu, we found the remains of a radio intercept station called Station H. And it's over on Oahu's windward side. The foundations for the antenna mounts and the buildings are still there. It's now a state park. They've actually got planters set over those antenna footings to sort of block them from view. But Station H was actually picking up Yamamoto's order to the strike force to attack Hawaii. And then the intercepts were sent over to Station Hypo, where they were decoded and sent to Washington, D.C., but never shared with the Hawaii commanders, Admiral Kimmel and General Short. And I had Admiral Kimmel's daughter on my show. Oh, and, wow. You know, basically talking about the utter betrayal of Kimmel being set up as the scapegoat for Pearl Harbor.
So I've got a question. The aircraft carriers, which are the only really super valuable ships in the beginning of World War II, because naval warfare was changing, they were all out of the harbor during the attack, and just the battleships got destroyed. Is there anything to that? Was that because?
Absolutely. The aircraft carriers and their modern escorts were all out to the southwest. And basically what the Japanese bombed in Pearl Harbor were old battleships left over, some of them from World War One. Everyone talks about the Arizona. And then there's the USS Iowa had already been taken out of combat status and was being used as a training ship. And they were getting ready to do the same thing with the Arizona. So it was basically old throwaway junk that Roosevelt sent out there to be sacrificed to get the war going.
Yeah. They knew after the oil embargo that it was coming because they really had no question after that.
I mean, the idea that the fleet maintained radio silence is an absolute myth. The larger ships with the better radios would receive the commands from Japan. Then they would rebroadcast them to the other ships in the fleet. And those transmissions were being picked up at listening stations all around the Pacific Rim. There was a Matson Company steamship, the SS Lurline, that was on its way from San Francisco to Honolulu. And their radio man, Leslie Grogan, was picking up these Japanese signals. And he succeeded in plotting their location coming across the Pacific, heading for Hawaii. The Lurline arrived in Honolulu on December 3rd, and Grogan turned over his logbooks and maps to the Office of Naval Intelligence. There is a record that they were received there, but of course they have now disappeared.
Wow.
Lies about war. Imagine us doing that.
Truth is the first casualty of war.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the funny thing is so many people buy the lies about today's wars, but think yesterday's wars were, you know, 100% as the official narrative goes. I've never understood why they don't think people lied, you know, 100 years ago or 80 years ago or whatever.
Well, I was taught in second grade about Honest Abe.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, there were no torpedoes in the Gulf of Tonkin. There was no Spanish mine at Hamana Harbor. The Lusitania was smuggling weapons to Great Britain. Pearl Harbor was not a surprise, and Saddam did not have nuclear weapons. So deal with it.
Yeah. There were no torpedoes in the Gulf of Tonkin, but there were on the USS Liberty. And what so we were not fired on in Vietnam. We killed 2 million people, roughly. We are fired on by the Israelis. We give them billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Gaffey.
Yeah. So, Ryan, what would you say to the people who say that Israel thought it was an Egyptian ship? What about all the transmissions through radio between them that they knew it was?
They had the signal intelligence from Cyprus. Plus, they survived. The people on the Liberty survived. And they, no, these are Israelis. We had a big American flag. It's just, I mean, one of them.
And of course, everybody knows that Egyptian horse carriers have got giant dish antennas all over the top of them.
Right. They knew it wasn't an Egyptian boat. But the more sinister thing is not only did the Israelis attack us, but Johnson was like, I want that damn thing on the bottom of the ocean. I mean, because there were survivors, when they came back, they had a gag order. You're not allowed to talk about this. We can't embarrass an ally.
Yep.
Right. But, you know, LBJ was sleeping with Matilda Krim. She was an Irgun terrorist. She's part of the AIDS drugs that Dr. Fauci pushed on everybody. The guy's a little gremlin. Yeah. I hope Rand Paul keeps sticking it on him. Like, you lied to Congress. You lied. You said there's no gain of function, and yes, there was.
Yeah.
But speaking of gain of function, you know, there was a man caught on tape doing gain of function research on anthrax back in 1992, Philip Zach, mm-hmm. and he actually stole samples from the lab and wrote a letter prior to any anthrax media during the September 11th anthrax scare, trying to pin an Egyptian again, right? Blame it on the Egyptians. Right? That's what they do. And largest Arab state, by the way. The FBI didn't even interview him, question him, nothing. Cohort Miriam Rippey, who he's having an extramarital affair with, nobody questioned her. So, you know, it's another incidence of they used anthrax to get the war in Iraq. I mean, that's why Colin Powell's holding a little wild anthrax and everything. But the people that actually had been caught doing gain of function research and illegally stealing samples from the lab and trying to frame people were not even questioned. Instead, they chased around Stephen Hatfield and then Bruce Ivins, and he died of a Tylenol overdose. And there's no court, no case closed. He was proven incapable of making, he didn't have the equipment for the anthrax to the NBC letter after he died. He didn't have it. It would have been possible to have done it. Plus, he wasn't in New Jersey and Florida and all these locations. He was at work in Maryland, you know, so it clearly wasn't Bruce Ivins. But that, you know, when the notes say death to America, death to Israel, and you have Israeli security forces saying they witnessed a meeting in Prague between Iraqis and Mohammed Atta. And then you got James Woolsey, who only got his job because of Epstein's blackmail on Clinton, going on every news channel saying, yeah, the Czechs and Israelis are saying the Iraqis sent anthrax to Atta. It looks like some of this anthrax came from Iraq. And then John McCain, whose father was involved in the Liberty that we were just talking about, cover up. You know, they're all the ones, the same people lying and lying and lying. And that story is just missing because about 9/11 is just always building 7. I'm like, that's great, but there's more than that. And let's talk about anthrax because that's what got the war in Iraq. A lot of people my age signed up to join the military and go invade Iraq thinking they had something to do with September 11th, and they didn't. But we did.
I mean, you've got George Bush on videotape admitting that Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11.
Cheney, too, later. Yeah, they didn't have WMDs. What do they have to do with 9/11? Nothing, he said. Mm-hmm. Like, then why'd you say that over and over? But you can't just blame Bush and Cheney. I mean, it was Time Magazine had Saddam Bin Laden. It was the New York Times. Mm-hmm. It was every talking and all the media
there it is,
went
there
with this lie.
We knew he'd do
it. Yeah, my dog whistle.
So, Mike, when people, because a lot of people are just coming into a lot of this information, whether it's Epstein, whether it's 9/11, anything that's out there that's a big event or something that, you know, shapes policy. What would you tell people just coming into this? What are some good sources to go to for information to kind of dig deeper into this? Because they say, well, if you don't watch mainstream media, where do you get information from?
Loose Change is great. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously I'll direct them to my website and I'll say follow the links to the original source material. Just be aware there is a lot of disinformation being poured on the net to try and make us look kooky, you know, like the Apollo moon landings were faked and chemtrails and all that other stuff. But just be a critical information consumer. And, you know, don't just believe what those expensively produced news shows are trying to tell you, because the money is being spent on those noon shows and those beautiful people to convince you to believe what they're telling you. And what they're telling you is what some corporation or some government wants you to believe, not what's really going on. And I think the current propaganda about the Omicron variant of COVID is a good example. The scientists who've discovered it are saying it's very mild. It's the mildest COVID yet. And yet we're getting the fear porn of Omicron, get your 7, 8, 9 shots are going to take it, you know, from the corporate
it's
media.
It's so mild. You went from a 99.8% survival rate to a 99.88% survival rate.
Yeah.
So,
but that's how viruses are. The more contagious they are, the less deadly they are normally.
Exactly.
So if you had they to sacrifice point deadliness for contagiousness.
To some individuals, Mike, just some names, just people who you kind of go to sometimes, who would you put out there?
Well, there's Ryan Dawson, obviously.
Oh, well, we stand on the shoulders of Ryan Dawson. Yeah. And you, Mike. And you, Mike.
And well,
no one would know me without Mike Rivero, because I couldn't. My first like major site to start republishing my work and have me on and talk to the radio and stuff was Mike. Or whatever network he was on, whether it was RBN or GCN, wherever he was is where I went.
I think that was back in my Genesis days.
Yeah, it was Genesis, and then Togi, I think it was called.
Yeah, I was not briefly with Togi for very long. I was trying to do 2 radio shows a day, and I just couldn't handle the schedule.
But just the website too, whatreallyhappened.com. That's how I got War by Deception out, was through that. That got the eyeballs on it. And then I think David Icke and some others like republished it without telling me. But it was always for me, whatreallyhappened.com and antiwar.com, specifically Justin Raimondo and Jim Loeb. Those are my two favorites over there. Justin's no longer with us. But that guy was we lost a mega star. And then I would say Robert Perry too. He's also no longer with us, but from Consortium News, very good on Iran-Contra, very good on Ukraine too.
Mm-hmm.
So is Ray McGovern. It's good on Ukraine.
Certain you know who's been great lately is Chris Hedges. What do you guys think of him?
Chris Hedges is another good name. If you want to talk about corporate media, Tucker Carlson. He still has a job.
He's been stealing my jokes.
Oh, okay.
Which is good. It's a kind of a wink, like, we're hearing you. Yeah, Tucker's been, like, for a talking head, really, really good. And recently, too, RFK Jr. on the COVID nonsense stud.
Yeah, and his letter he wrote that was published defending letting Sirhan out, his appeal to Governor Newsom. I don't know if you guys got to read that, but that was amazing. He just laid out all the evidence and said, I do not believe Sirhan killed my father. I believe he should be let out. He served his time. He's not a danger to anybody. And it's RFK Jr. and one other Kennedy sibling, I believe, who are on board with that. Then the rest of them, including Ethel, are saying no.
Fancy 8-shot guns that shot 13 times.
Right, yeah. Johnson Iver
around and hit you in the back.
Yeah, and RFK Jr. just says clearly in the letter he recently had published that he believes Thane Caesar shot his father.
Yeah, he did.
I'm gonna throw
he was actually going to meet him in the Philippines, and then Thane died.
Thane died. Yeah. What
Reed? I'm going to throw another name out there. He's actually watching, but everyone should go subscribe to Adam Fitzgerald. He's a guy I've come across pretty recently. He does great research on all this type of stuff.
Yeah, Adam Fitzgerald and Nelson Martin are my guys. Like they were two of mine, two of the people when I used to go ham on 9/11, right? And these were two that stuck with me the whole time. And now they're both very well versed on the entire event. And so both those guys, Nelson goes by Thermal Detonator. And
I think he is too.
Adam Fitzgerald is, really struggling with social media, trying to build his Twitter, trying to build his stuff. And I'm like, I wouldn't put the effort in on those places. They're just going to erase you as soon as you get larger anyway. Like
there's a lot of new social media coming online that are censorship free. I mean, VK,
Telegram
is a good one. Gab is a good one. TLB Talk is a good one. They're still building their audience. And they allow a lot of discussion there.
This is Nelson right here, DJ Thermal Detonator. So, yeah, those guys are both great.
Put up with all the kook crap too. Like around 2015 or so, I was like, whatever. Like I've put all it out there. I don't know what to do. It's too much of a headache. Because they just harass you. It didn't matter what I'm talking about. I'd have people come in and argue about the Pentagon. I'm like, there's fucking debris. I can't even, I can't re-explain this the millionth time. but they never go away. And it's because, like we were saying earlier, that disinfo gets pumped, whereas others get shadow banned or outright banned for, you know, talking like, oh, well, did you know?
It's information warfare. I mean, this is the front line in the battle for the minds of America.
Yeah, the amazing thing is you can, like, if you want to go look up Glenn Dubin's Epstein connections, they're pretty easy to find, but they can just flood the market with so much idiocy that people don't even have interest in it. That's more effective than actually trying to sweep through everything and actually ban every single person who's talking about it. If you can just kookify it, then no one will pay attention to any of it.
You'd also have to know who Glenn Dubin was to even know to look it up. You know what I mean? So you'd have to know who Glenn and Ava Dubin were and what they were doing. And so if you don't have that initial information, you don't even know to look for it. There's a lot of stuff, like we were saying, you were about the mass media just being absolute trash. You got to add the late night comedians into that too, because they are part of the propaganda. I don't know how many people I've argued with who got their entire Civil War history from Stephen Colbert and Forrest Gump.
Comedians, they're starting to lose ratings. They're losing the young demographic, and I guess people are starting to see through them.
They're just trash.
You didn't like that?
Yeah, Fallon just did one with Ariana Grande and some other garbage human being, and it was so disgusting. It was just like, you're just a whore. You're a whore for general election and the Pentagon.
It was a cry for help. They go that much over the top, like somebody wearing nothing but mask and having syringes on each finger and stuff. I'm like, are you okay? Like, is this a cry for help? Do they have you hostage somewhere? Like, it was so cringe.
Maybe I was just super naive back then, but he was like, he had Trump on his show and was nice with him, and he did this funny skit with him.
He
like,
pet his hair.
Yeah, he was one of the only guys that like was sort of decent to him, but they've all just turned into trash. Like, They all used to love me.
Chuck Schumer loved me when I was a Democrat. Boy, he did. I gave you a lot of money, Chuck.
What about Hillary Clinton? Did you go to her wedding? She went to your wedding, right?
She came to my wedding, and Rosie O'Donnell came to my wedding, and she ate all my wedding cake. She did. It was a disaster.
Okay.
But, mainly, Mike, why I ask is, obviously, the four of us, we pay attention to this stuff, and we've been doing a lot of research. Yes. Your everyday person who's consumed with their day job 40 hours a week, they might have a family, a house they're running, it's hard for them to really know where to go. So I just like to ask people who know their stuff what they turn to, and then I try to give it to those people and say, don't take my word for it. Watch a whole group of different sources, and you can get a pretty good idea of what's going on.
Well, part of the skill of being a rabble rouser is understanding what the rabble is ready to listen to and what would be a step too far, because I've seen people who are involved in independent media and they keep going out with more and more revelations until finally people's defense mechanisms kick in. They say, oh, come on, this all has to be a conspiracy theory. So little bit at a time, you cannot shove those people across the bridge. You have to stand on the other side and beckon them forward. And the ones who are interested and willing to do the homework, you spend time with. The ones that are just there to argue or are being paid to argue with you, you just ignore, tune them out.
Exactly.
Shut them off.
So, Eric, what would Alex Jones tell people about, finding out the truth and ignoring it?
You gotta go to saveinfowars.com right now. We're being attacked by everybody, the deep state folks, the Clinton Foundation, Soros, they're all coming at me, the globalists, everybody. You gotta go to infowars.com. That's the only place you gotta go. Forget the four horsemen. Forget about Dawson and Rivero. Jackman, okay. They're all shills.
I gotta get you that HomeGuard commercial read. It's a pretty good one. We got old Melonhead on there.
Yeah, Melonhead.
You know, when he interviewed Trump about the dancing Israelis and they just called them dancing Arabs, you know that Alex knows better, but he didn't say anything to correct it. And it's just, what a shill.
There was just
there's a YouTube video of Alex Jones very early in his career. Just openly saying, I want you to understand this. I support Israel. I back Israel.
And I'm the one that put that on YouTube.
Okay, good.
And it was March 17th.
After he made that statement that, a whole bunch of money can't pouring into his empire.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one clip I've seen.
He married his masseuse.
There's only one, and it's on September 12th, where he's kind of saying, like, you know, screw Israel. If we keep backing them like this, then this type of stuff's going to happen more. He like kind of got based for like 5 minutes and then it went away. I don't know.
Well, it was like Bill Cooper. He went off script when Americans got killed. I think it really disturbed him, but they whipped him back online pretty fast.
Yeah.
Because he promoted all the kook stuff. I mean, it was the Fetzer and all that. It was all Alex.
Yeah.
I just had hot bowl chili. I got the documents. You skill them.
I'm gonna eat some chili that was tainted with some vials from Fort Detrick or something. Infowars.com. But I agree with that, Mike. Like, the people that just want to argue with you and come at you with that energy, just ignore them.
Yeah.
That's been a pretty good strategy, and a lot of more people should do that. Don't give them your energy.
I always try to get them to record a conversation because I don't want to have this argument 100 times. I'm like, can I get a representative from you kooks that I can record? So, because they're so dumb, they don't even know how wrong they are because they can't. Yeah, that's what
they don't even care.
Yeah, that's just, they just want to be like, you're a Fed. Rah. I'm like, let's record this because this is entertainment for everyone else, because no one else can understand how someone could get that stupid.
Well, and a lot of them back down
because a lot of them aren't really that stupid. They're just paid to act like that.
When you're hiding behind a keyboard, paid to
censor wiki.
When you're hiding behind a keyboard, you don't actually need to know anything because you can just look stuff up as you go. Whereas if you come on a video for someone with an hour and you actually get in a discussion with them, then you actually have to have a little bit of knowledge at least about what you're talking about.
He had a guy fighting with me about crop circles. And I sent him a picture of somebody had made SpongeBob in the crops. He's like, what is that? I'm like, well, you said we couldn't do a circle. Here's SpongeBob. I think it's SpongeBob.
Those were the Chi-Coms. Yeah.
So,
there's a good strategy as far as like standing on the bridge to beckon them in. Like, you're not going to start with glass windows in Majdanek or something. You're going to have to, I think, the second Iraq war is one that hasn't been kookified so much, other than, you know, peak oil and stuff. It's like, that's one where half the population's with you because they just hated Bush anyway, because they're just on their team. So you can use that tribalism to your advantage to say, look, everybody, right and left wing media, gave this war propaganda. And then even after it was debunked, no one clearly came out and said we were wrong about the WMDs. They still like, oh, they moved them to Syria. That's what Miller said. You know, the Iraq war is one that's safe starting point or something. And then you can work toward your deeper conspiracies and things. But I think I've found that one, because people were alive when it happened. They know it was based on lies. We lost a lot of money. A lot of people came back in coffins. And you've never seen the media so uniform. Even Fox was on board. In fact, they might have been the worst ones at that time with O'Reilly and Hannity.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they're the only outlier when it comes to COVID, when it comes to Ukraine, when it comes to Syria. It's Tucker saying, nah. And because Tucker's so successful, I think he's the most successful. Now you're seeing Laura Ingraham and Jesse Waters and Greg Gutfeld all get the Tucker effect, where they're moving toward his center because that's what people want to watch. They want to hear something true. And, you know, when he had Rittenhouse on, he had RFK Jr. on. And, you know, Tucker got red-pilled because one of his sons was a fan of Ron Paul. And way back during the Ron Paul revolution, Tucker was one of the only mass media heads to actually go and talk to libertarians. He's the only one that gave him a little bit of voice. He was kind of like, you're wrong, but you could slowly see the wheels starting to turn as, you know, he drifted that direction towards freedom.
Yeah, what kind of annoys me is a lot of people, if someone's not all the way to being libertarian, then they don't want to talk to them. And I think we actually need people who aren't all the way to libertarian. Like, we need people who are left-wingers and are right-wingers who lean libertarian so that they can push right-wingers and left libertarians, or sorry, right-wingers and left-wingers toward us. Because if everyone were a libertarian, then you're in the middle and then you got these two fringes. But if you got someone like Tucker and then someone like Chris Hedges or Abby Martin or something who agree with us on some stuff, they can push people toward being anti-war or whatever, you know, push them away from the Rachel Maddows and the Bill O'Reillys. And
Rachel like Maddow. Well, another overlap that like people like Martin or Hedges or Max Blumenthal, some of that kind of, or Glenn Greenwald, like kind of on the left, but still not retarded. Yeah. is the corporate bailout too big to fail? Like, everyone's against corporate welfare. And whether the leftists see the corporations running the state or the people on the right see the state running the corporations, the result's the same. So stop having the government give out corporate welfare. And that's right. You got to call it corporate welfare. That's what it is. Socialism for the rich, whatever. I avoid words like socialism, capitalism, whatever, because then you're going to sit there and debate terms for an hour. Just call it corporate welfare. And both parties are like, yeah, why did we give trillions, not billions, but trillions to the corporate world? Some of it not even in the U.S. Why are we giving money to Goldman Sachs? Why are we giving money to Countrywide, Merrill Lynch, down the list? That was the biggest transfer of wealth in history in 2008 during the Obama regime. And I've never heard anybody that doesn't work for Wall Street disagree, whether they're left, right, libertarian or what. They're like, yeah, that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah,
it did. And but what happened was we had Occupy Wall Street, which, you know, I don't like yelling at buildings, but you had people go out there and completely forgot about the Tea Party, the taxed enough already. But they didn't talk about that. It was save the rainforest. It was any pet issue under the sun other than the focus on Wall Street. And what really blew my mind is Occupy Wall Street, Washington, D.C. You're in Washington, D.C. Why are you running around in the park playing bongos when you could set up a meeting and go inside the building and actually talk to the people that write the laws, which is your perfect legal right to do? And they're not. They're out there wasting their day on Facebook talking to each other.
Yeah,
which is so part of what it's for.
Is the transfer of wealth from 2008 still bigger than the last year and a half, or has this outdone it by now?
Yeah, well, yeah, we're getting close, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
It was like $28 trillion.
I guess it's still more, but
I don't know what the real inflation rates are in the U.S., but I know it's more than 6.8%.
I'd say it's closer to 11.
You think so? Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with whatever Mike says. It's got to be. And in certain products, it's higher than that. Look for like gasoline and a lot of agricultural products. It's up way higher than that.
So, Mike, after Trump doing the one term, I mean, I know this is kind of a different direction, but what is your overall thoughts on Donald Trump? Is he just a made man and a puppet of the elite, or is he in some ways a renegade and his own man?
I tend more toward the latter. But I think Trump made a very bad strategic mistake. When he won his first term, he wanted to be magnanimous in victory. So he came into the office and said, all of you can keep your jobs. And because he came up in the world of business where if you are the new boss, everybody working in the building is going to be supporting you. And that's not the way politics works. Trump should have just basically fired everybody and brought in his own people to support him. That, I think, was his biggest single mistake. The other thing I'm very unhappy with is that Trump had an opportunity to clean up our election system, and he dropped the ball. You know, he ran into a little bit of resistance from the state election boards, and then he just turned it all over to the Department of Homeland Security, and he shut down his Election Integrity Commission. And when he did that, I said, you're going to lose in 2020, you know, if you don't clean up this mess. And he didn't clean it up, and he lost. And, you know, we're seeing all this stuff coming out of Maricopa and Fulton County. More and more Americans are convinced that the November 2020 general election was fraudulent on many different levels. And so far, of course, the government and the media are standing firm saying, well, we don't care what you think. Your leaders are your leaders, and just deal with it.
So if he runs again, do you think he's going to be different if he's not running for re-election again? Do you think he would be more of a renegade if he actually won again in 24?
Well, I would hope that he has learned some very hard lessons about the dirty world of politics from his first term. He was caught off guard. I mean, he did make a big thing about drain the swamp and everything, but clearly he did not understand just how deep that swamp really goes.
Yeah. So did you get, Ryan, did you see him turning on Netanyahu with that article that came out? And
Bibi's a loser. Yeah. What a loser.
I was doing a show.
Fuck him.
Yeah. I was doing a show with Ethan Ralph when that news broke. And before he even read the article on air, I said, well, yeah, Netanyahu congratulated Biden. He's the first foreign leader to do so. And then that ended up being like exactly what pissed Trump off. I think he would be different the second time, because if you see what he did as a lame duck, he brought in McGregor. He got rid of, he had already fired Bolton, but he got rid of Kissinger and some other neocons. But bringing in McGregor, which is what he should have done at the beginning, the DOD, and he started cleaning up the cabinet, but it was too little too late. It's like, what, do you have a month and a half to do something with this? And they did push through medical price transparency, which is something we really, really needed. That was the last good thing he did while he was in office. But, you know, he learned a little too slowly. I mean, why'd you hire John Bolton in the first place? Why'd you keep Christopher Wray in there? Christopher Wray sat on Hunter's laptop for a year and a half. Well, like, yeah. Why don't you look up, like, Kirkland's associations with Rosemont Sitka and their deals with Biden and Archer and Hines, and what they were doing with Rosneft, what they were doing with what used to be called Sibneft. People call it Gazprom today. He made over $21 million, and so did William Barr. And of course, William Barr and his father was involved with helping Epstein get his first job.
Dalton but School.
Yeah, these people are still with King and Spalding, these law firms that are profiting off the Biden enterprises, and the Bidens are partnered with the Chinese, with the communist Chinese. There's so much he could have brought up about Biden during the election that no one touched, and there's a lot you could bring up with Trump dealing with Bob Labudi and Tony Salerno and a lot of the mafia in New York and organized crime. Neither side could talk about it, because that, which means both are involved in it. Just like Iran-Contra, the Democrats were not going after the Republicans because they were doing it too, right? Mm-hmm. So I would rather have a DeSantis or somebody in there. He's like Trump with tact. But if I could have a magic wand, when the Republicans win, and they're going to make Donald Trump the press secretary.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
What do you think about
Kelly McEnany did a good job. Can you imagine Donald Trump meeting the press every day? Get out of here, you fake news. Just
great. What do you think about Rand Paul? Do you think he has a shot of, like, if he actually really goes hard against Fauci and it turns out good for him, do you think that could actually give him some?
If you get Fauci in jail, you could become king of the world. I mean, if he gets that under his belt, he's a shoo-in, but I don't know, man. They protect these people. Like,
yeah,
some people on the left are like, it's Lord Fauci, Saint Fauci. They have Fauci pillows, and they're going to get their fourth Fauci ouchie. Take the booster. Just take your 11th booster. Yeah. They're going to run out of silly names.
Yeah. They're running out of Greek letters. They're going to have to go to Sanskrit next.
The Rosie O'Donnell variant.
You rearrange the letters in Omicron, it says moronic.
Yes.
Ooh.
It also says micro in the same thing. It's this guy in England, his name's Chris Edwards. He just nailed this. Like, last year he said, here's what they're going to do. Like, first they're going to do vaccine passports, and then they're going to have the new Delta variant, and then they'll have some other variant after that. It'll never end. They'll have it right before Christmas. He was saying all this to me on Skype. And then it comes, and to steal a phrase from Mike Rivera, imagine my lack of shock. That's my phrase. Not, I Israeled that from Mike. I Israeled this too. I actually quoted Mike in this, the book Separation of Business and State, but it went something like, when sickness became a profit opportunity, healthcare was over.
Yes.
Mike, we got a question from the audience. I'd like to get your thoughts about the Iran situation and whether the U.S. will be pressured by the Israel Gulf lobbyists to engage militarily in near future.
Well, there is no question that Israel has been lobbying the U.S. to attack Iran for them. They've been doing it for a long time, for about 30 years. Israel keeps screaming that Iran is just weeks away from a nuclear bomb. And after 30 years of hearing those claims, you begin to wonder just what's going on over there. I think it would be a mistake to go into Iran. Like I said, we couldn't even handle Afghanistan. But Israel, you know, they don't like to fight their own wars. They want the United States to do it for them. And, you know, the fear of nuclear weapons you know, is just the excuse, as it was in the case of the Iraq war. And you can look back and say, well, Saddam didn't really have nuclear weapons. And Israel is saying, well, we're not saying that Iran has nuclear weapons, but they want them. And that's why you should go kill them for us.
Yeah, they were saying about Hamas that they had weapons capabilities, like every country does. Every country has capabilities of weapons. As you can name a state that doesn't have that, right? And, you know, this is... I'm so sick of the Israel stuff. I mean,
that's
why we went to war in Iraq. And I wish people understood that. We didn't go there to take oil. Israel gets 77% of its oil from Iraq post-war. Yep. We didn't get any. We lost the oil for food program. The rest of the oil went to China. We lost everything for them. And you look at the OSP, you look at the people that lied about WMDs. This wasn't Exxon. This wasn't BP. These weren't oil companies. These were neoconservative Zionists that wanted Saddam taken out. He was aiding Palestinians and he's against their regional ambitions, and they needed a source of oil. Read Jimmy Carter's book, Peace Not Apartheid.
Yes.
He'll tell you about the source of when revolution happened in 79, that was it for Israel. They lost Sinai Peninsula. They lost oil from Iran. They were desperate. And a year later, they threw Iraq and Iran into a bloody 8-year war. And 2 years after that, it's the first Gulf War. This is an old plan. So, and, you know, in Iran-Contra ought to be called Israel-Contra because Israel was aiding them before the U.S. got involved.
Yeah. What about them selling our military secrets to China, too? You know, all the scare talking about China right now. Israel, they've passed a lot of our secrets on to China. And then China has, I forget what model fighter it is, but don't they have a model airplane that's almost exactly identical to ours? And that's because the Israelis...
They're almost their entire fighter jet program was reverse engineered, but for the Israelis were given by the U.S. and then they sold them to the Chinese. The Chinese realize if you want to get away with a crime, just involve the Israelis and the American media won't touch it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why not? I got another great Mike Rivera quote I pulled out of my book. I was looking for the healthcare one. I found this one. This is like a calendar level quote. Most propaganda is not designed to fool the critical thinker, but only to give moral cowards the excuse not to think at all. Money. That's what it is. Like a lot of people, they know it's not true. They knew there weren't any WMDs. They just wanted it. The war's exciting. You know, let's blow up Iraq. So 9/11, we got to pound somebody, right? Look at the rubble.
Could we ever get to a point in the United States when our government is just not completely compromised, blackmailed, or just under a vice grip by Israel? Is that ever a possibility?
Well, only if a gigantic asteroid falls on Israel.
I mean, they're already shooting children and ethnically cleansing their neighbors. Like, what do they have to do to lose the PR war? It's slowly starting to happen, at least with the Palestine thing. Most people don't understand that war in Syria, that's Israel. Both wars in Iraq, Israel. Like, they don't see how bad our entire Middle East policy is directed by these parasites. But they are starting to understand, like, for no other reason, I think, because the left's like white bad, brown good, that the Palestinians are being abused by the Israelis. And they're starting to lose on that front. Every time they do these cyclical, you know, throw it against the wall wars to Palestine, and each time you're seeing more and more people, especially in the foreign press, start saying negative things about Israel and how horrible it is to blow up the AP press building. Last time, the first targets they did is blow up AP press. What's going on? And you see it leaking on Twitter, of all places. Facebook won't let you talk about it. YouTube won't let you talk about it. Twitter's really bad on censorship, but they seem to be okay with bashing Israel about Palestine. As long as you don't go past that line, you know, talking about Epstein and things, then you'll be okay. And because of that, a lot of videos have gone all over Twitter of, you know, if you want to talk to some soccer mom, don't argue about Middle East policy and economics. Just show her a video of Israeli snipers shooting kids and laughing about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, or building a cage around houses in Hebron, dumping trash on people's heads and stuff. They don't know. A lot of good Christian people don't. They think, oh, you did. God gave the land to the Jews or whatever. When they see their behavior, just fucking brutality that they do to these people, that's it. Because they only support them out of ignorance. Once they know, and you got to show them pictures, you got to show them video, then they're ready to listen to the rest of it. But they will not listen to you until you break that emotional chain that they have from religion or whatever. You know, they're just like to Israel. But as soon as you smash that, and all you got to do is show them the abuse of Palestinians, and it's endless. They can't they can't even censor it fast enough because they do it every day.
Yeah. And then you can also point to that. I mean, religion plays a part in the Middle East, but not nearly as much as they want. I mean, Israel and Saudi Arabia have very similar goals. I mean, they want you to think that this is a Muslim versus Jewish battle going on. And it's not. I mean, this is complete bullshit.
Yeah, this is lunatics versus humanity. The Wahhabi Islamists and the Jewish Zionists are peas in a pod. I mean,
they're equally batshit.
They're both dependent on the United States, and you know they need these Wahhabi fanatics to use as cannon fodder in places like Syria, where they use and Afghanistan. Right, that's how Al Qaeda began. Was U.S. financing these Wahhabi diaspora that ended up in Afghanistan through BCCI and working with the Saudi royals, as they did with September 11th again. You know, they need them.
Safari Club.
Yes, you know. That's right. Yep. So they need that. And the Zionists, it's different because you can criticize Saudi Arabia and still have a job, still be in your university. Right. And you should.
Most Americans hate Saudi Arabia already. But
yeah, average starving people in Yemen. But that's what the thing is. Like, even if you were allowed to criticize Israel, and you're not, I'm like, well, we are allowed to criticize Saudi Arabia, and they still do it all. So, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you have to have power. Like, even when, I don't know anybody that's like Saudi Arabia is some upstanding guy. They're just, the monarchy is lovely. You know, like nobody that, no one's like thinks. Is anti-Houthi or whatever that but they, you know, they still get their weapons deals, they still get their favors, you know. And you can even point out Saudi connections to September 11th, like they were giving money to Nawif al-Hazmi and al-Midhar, and that's all true. The FBI admits it, no one cares.
Yeah,
so who do you go to when it's, you know, there's nobody watching the watchers type of thing. It's just sort of seen like, yeah, we know they're corrupt, but that's just how it is. Yeah, it doesn't have to be that way. Yeah. But you never really see a big movement like end aid to Saudi Arabia or something, because everyone's thinking, no, we need the oil. I don't want to pay more at the gas pump.
Yeah. So what's the Epstein connection to Saudi Arabia? You're talking about the Khashoggi's earlier and the rape yachts and
And you know, when they found a passport, it was weird because it was an Austrian passport with a Saudi Arabian address and name, but it was definitely Jeffrey Epstein, and he had this in a safe in New York. Oh, but he's not intelligence. You know, a lot of people have stuff like that laying around, right?
Mm-hmm.
He said it was to make him safe when he traveled around Europe against anti-Semitism. Oh my Lord, lots of Jews travel all over Europe. Nobody has fake passports. They're not. What are the people at the airport being like, oh my gosh, there's a Jew in the airport? I mean, they probably, it's so stupid. What a dumb excuse, you know? That's a Boris Berezovsky level rhetoric. No, I have a theory on why he had that, and I've talked ad nauseum about it, usually with Sean Atwood and stuff. But, you know, these people, the Saudis and the Israelis, are always working together. Saudi Arabia has something the U.S. needs, oil. So it's like, do it or else. And in turn, they need to pilfer out some petrodollars for weapons. They're completely dependent on the U.S. for defense.
Yep.
And they realize if you better get with Israel or you're going to be the next Iran. Like, they're going to cut you off, because we could get oil from Iran. They have a lot of oil, too. But we don't. And we're, you know, Biden's really sawing the branch he's sitting on, closing down pipelines and putting sanctions on Russia, putting sanctions on Iran, or keeping the ones that are already there, actually. Where are you going to get oil from? Right? You can't get it from Venezuela. You can't get it from Russia. You can't get it from Iraq or Iran. Saudi Arabia is make you even more dependent on Saudi Arabia, right?
Right.
And good old bone saw.
Yeah, Mohammed Bone Salman.
Mohammed Bone Saw is a very nice guy. He's a sweetheart. Okay, we've had many great times together, and he's a strong leader, and he's doing great work over there. He is.
Really, Khashoggi had a worked with organized crime in this real estate scam in Spain that was involved. That's who Litvinenko owed money to, which was why he was smuggling polonium to try to sell it for a high price. And he died of a botched smuggling operation. And then they all screamed, oh, yeah, Russia poisoned him with polonium, because that makes sense that they said KGB. I think they meant FSB because KGB's gone. But oh, the Russians are going to poison somebody with an $11 million radioactive poison instead of just, I don't know, ricin or any other list of poisons or just shooting him or whatever, right? He died of a botched smuggling operation, but why was he risking himself to smuggle polonium into the UK? Is because he owed a lot of money to organized crime, which goes back to Anand Khashoggi and this whole big nest. Epstein and Maxwell were in Spain a lot, and there's a lot of Spanish figures in his black book. And that hasn't really been touched on as much as, I guess it's not as sexy a story as Prince Andrew and Bill Clinton and all, but which are both important. But if we really need a lot of journalists digging through and looking at this, but the problem is there's so much mis and disinformation and a total media blackout. The public's super interested in this story. No one cares. I mean, Lynn Maxwell's on trial right now, and they barely say anything. There's a few videos on YouTube here and there. Nobody's saying much about it. Annie Farmer had her testimony. Defense rested. She probably will end up staying in jail, but they've really limited this just to the her assistance in human trafficking and grooming these girls and really missing the boat on the bigger picture here. And they never gave an explanation about this passport and these diamonds and all these people that are on these CDs that are in the safe. But they put a big kibosh on the whole thing. But then you wonder why. Because, yeah, people like Bloomberg were visiting Les Wexner while the little kids are over there. And, you know, New York is so corrupt from top to bottom. And then their last three governors have resigned over sexual misconduct. And the woman that's in there now is just the Fruit Loop of Fruit Loops, right? She's going to be like, everybody wear 5 masks and an anal plug. And they've completely lost it. And I think this is a real estate scam too, because BlackRock is buying up all this property. I've seen videos in New York where they go block by block of just empty shop, not closed, gone, like just nothing there. So someone's going to be able to come buy this up for pennies on the dollar. Then suddenly we'll reopen and they've monopolized prime real estate in New York City. How else could you do such a thing? BlackRock.
What are your thoughts on BlackRock, Mike? You know, I assume that's something you've covered a bit.
Probably not as much as Ryan has. There's no question we live in an age where big money is influencing way too much of our lives. It is a hallmark of a fascist economic state. And whether it's BlackRock or a couple of the other, you know, the Bank of International Settlements, they know politicians love money, and because of that, they're able to they're the real rulers of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, the BIS puts BlackRock to shame, actually. That is the Fed's Fed, right?
Yes.
You can think of it. And part of what led to Japan's decline, I mean, in the 80s, they were catching up with the U.S. to be the largest market in the world, and with one little stroke with a pen at the BIS, that all got reversed. It's scary that the money supply is in the hands of just a few decision makers can just wreck a nation so easily, raise interest rates, lower interest rates. And I, again, back to my magic wand, I'd put Ron Paul in as the Fed chair so he could get in there and do nothing. Take a vacation. Or Secretary of Treasury.
Mike, I'm going to switch gears a little bit, but there was a giant fuel spill on the island of Oahu, where you're from. You said you've been covering that for a while. I saw something from Abby Martin a few days ago, and then Tulsi Gabbard said something about it today. But both of them said it's something that has been under scrutiny for a while. So could you give us a little more info on that?
Yeah, it's not technically an oil spill. in addition to the big white fuel tanks that you will see in aerial photos of Pearl Harbor, the ones that the Japanese didn't bomb, which left the U.S. enough fuel to fight the Pacific War, there is a hidden facility called Red Hill. And it is a real hill that has been hollowed out and holds storage tanks for things like aviation fuel, bunker diesel, various of the petroleum distillates. And it was built, in World War II, and it's corroded, and it has been leaching petroleum distillates into the aquifer there, and it is starting to be noticeable coming out of the tap water. And a lot of the military people on the Pearl Harbor base have been complaining. There have been tests of the water that confirm this material is leaking in. It's a tremendous health hazard. We know there's a link between petroleum and cancers. And the aquifer basically supplies the entire island. So they're starting to see indications that this contamination is starting to reach outside the Pearl Harbor base. The state of Hawaii wants the Navy to shut down this facility and drain the tanks, and the Navy is basically dragging their feet on that.
Sounds like the state of Hawaii is anti-science and wants to kill Grandma.
Well, they love their military out there.
Those white tankers, are you sure that wasn't a misspotting of Meghan McCain?
Meghan McCain and Rosie are sunbathing out there in the harbor, and boy, what a beauty of a sight that is.
Oh, okay.
Free Willy. They're rebooting Free Willy.
I think the sun would be like, hurry up and blot us out, Bill Gates.
What'd you say, Mike? Greenpeace is trying to put him back in the water?
Yeah.
They're rebooting Free Willy, and boy, they are trying to Free Willy. They are. It's huge.
Y'all know about the infamous exploding whale?
Oh,
yeah. Yes. The dynamite one or whatever.
It was one of the first like viral Northern videos California. On the internet. Yeah, they dynamited a whale.
The whale ate Chipotle.
You know, other people are like, that's a stupid idea, but I'm going to keep my mouth shut because I kind of want to see that. They're like, yeah, that sounds good.
What does this look like?
It looks like an exploding whale with like chunks falling on cars and blood falling everywhere.
Somebody thought the whale was just going to dissolve into millions of little tiny pieces, and the seagulls would eat them, and the whale carcass would be gone. Well, whales don't respond to dynamite quite that way, and it came down in very, very large chunks.
Chunks.
Yeah, one of which crushed a car.
Yeah, they went miles.
The reporter's all like doing a countdown, 10, 9, and as soon as it went up, you could hear like, it sounded like hail. You know, if you ever heard of hail come, shh, and they just scream, get out of the way. You know, just like, here comes the whale. That person, they're wearing like a trench coat or something. It's covered in whale guts and blood or whatever. Walking home, shuts the door. Hi, honey. What happened to you today? Fuck off. I got covered by exploding whale. Okay. That sounds good. Sounds like a good Friday.
Takes it,
says, thanks for having Mike Rivera on. Great guest. Good show, gentlemen. Cheers to Texit.
Since we're in the holiday season and I had to be festive today, mm-hmm. What are the holidays like for you guys? I mean, with your families, knowing that you lean based and you look into the stuff that you look into, how are holiday get-togethers like for you, Mike?
Well, they're great. I mean, this is a very conservative part of the country, and one of the reasons we specifically moved to Santa Claus, Indiana, is to be with our family. And my brother-in-law and his wife are just literally 5 minutes down the road. Their daughter, who's also my doctor, lives up in Dale, which is the next town that-a-way. And we get together and we have a lot of fun, and the dogs all love me and attack me. And so, mm-hmm. We have a good time here. And of course, in a town named Santa Claus, they take Christmas pretty seriously here.
We're saying Merry Christmas again. Believe me, we are.
Yeah, yes.
The Grinch is not welcome in Santa Claus.
Yeah.
I said the Grinch is not welcome in Santa Claus.
Not really. And, if you're not festive for the season, they look at you like there's something wrong. You know, get ready to port you to back down to Mexico or something.
You're a Chi-Com.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, when your family...
In Japan, Christmas is more... it's, you know, it's not traditionally a Japanese holiday. So they have Christmas, but it's more like the US's Valentine's Day, where it's more of like for couples than for children. So they have illumination throughout all the cities and sometimes Christmas trees. Mostly they just put a bunch of lights in all the trees and stuff, and couples go around and do viewings and ride the boats and stuff and kissy time. It's like Valentine's. But just in my house, I'm doing the whole traditional Santa thing with my children and all. But Japan does everything a little bit different. For here, New Year's Eve is the big day where all the trains go 24 hours and people go to the temples and get their fortunes. And that's the big holiday. Christmas is kind of catching on. Halloween has also grown just in the last like 5 years. It's all like adult costume parties and stuff. They don't really do the trick or treating part yet, but they really like enjoy dressing up anyway. They seem to do that a lot. All the cosplay and stuff is very Japanese. So yeah, they're getting into Halloween and they don't have a Thanksgiving at all. Like, why would they? But Christmas also, they have Christmas turkey, Christmas cake. It's really funny because KFC has sort of like nudged it way into being the face of Christmas. And it's kind of like, so the mother doesn't have to cook. They're like, just bring in KFC. Like, but KFC is like higher end here and better than
they cater.
It's not like it's KFC, but it isn't like fast food like you think. Right. And so they have like the Christmas buckets and you can get turkey, and you can't get turkey in Japan unless you get it from Costco. So it's kind of a big deal. It's funny that there's the KFC Christmassy KFC. They're like, oh yeah, KFC. You'd never associate that to Christmas in America, right? But here, that's like the Christmas place, going to get buckets of chicken. Funny. And they dress up Colonel Sanders. They have like Colonel Sanders statues outside of KFCs, and he'll have on the Santa hat and all that. And this, because they just see it as like, oh, we should eat something foreign because Christmas is foreign. So let's eat foreign stuff. I don't know.
I'm definitely the outlier in my immediate family, but luckily, my immediate family doesn't care. We all get together and we still get along and everything. But I do have extended family who won't see me because I'm not double boosted. That kind of sucked. And one of them I actually was going to go see, and he just said, sorry, I'm not seeing anyone who's not double booster. I was like, okay. But yeah,
we don't have that problem. A lot of Native Americans are like, oh, you want us to take more vaccines? Didn't you sterilize us last time? No, thanks.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. So, Ryan, I actually wanted to ask you this because it was after we did our last Four Horsemen. But for Thanksgiving, I was with my family in New England, and we're having Thanksgiving dinner. And
your family, meaning Dave Smith, Scott Horton, Peter Kennis.
That's my spiritual family.
Okay.
But, yeah, we're sitting around the table, and my brother asked something. He was asking my dad, like, hey, who's your spirit animal? And so then my brother's fiance got all really pissed off and annoyed. And she's like, that's cultural appropriation. How dare you say something like that? And I was the only one in the
whole family. So is democracy.
Well, I was the only one in the family who had a Native American friend. So I was going to ask you, like, what do you think about cultural appropriation, that term? What is your thought on all that shit?
I think it's usually just like silly white girls that get mad about it on behalf of someone else. I've never seen a Native care.
Right?
It's always some uppity shit lib from a university. I'm like, cultural appropriate? You want to really go down that line? Like, okay, then don't have electricity. Don't have, like, look at, if you're going to start assigning where something came from to an ethnic group, then you can't do anything. Right, because everything's from something, right? This is ridiculous. Like the fact that you live in a republic, the Articles of Confederation were based on the Iroquois Confederation. Like, our whole experiment, it comes from influence from Native Americans. They used to be on the Continental Dollars, and a lot of the weird artwork on the dollar, that's what that is. It's not all the stuff they say with Illuminati and anything. It's just Native American symbols, the arrows. You know, that the eagle are holding, it comes from a speech from Red Tree. You know, there are councils in Philadelphia Hall. It's just, I hate that term cultural appropriation. Like, it's so stupid. It's so bad. Oh, you can't dress up like Indians on Halloween. Well, but you can be Vikings and pirates and other things. That's all right. You know, get bent.
Yeah.
But I've never seen a Native American complain about it. Like, no, we got real problems, right? It's always some uppity white girl.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see a lot of blacks or anyone else complain about that either. Sometimes, you know, you could always find trash on TikTok or something, but not normal people I meet. They would just, what? You know, no, that's not it. That's so stupid. That's like Joe Biden saying, if you don't vote for me, you're not black. You're ascribing like, oh, this is how blacks are. This is how Indians are. This is how whites are supposed to be. And that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. You know,
if I dress like Japanese people, that's because I live here. It's not because I'm copying them. It's functional most of the time. But
yeah.
So silly.
Yeah. Cultural speaking of
spirit animals are fun. I mean, can we not do horoscopes? Didn't we steal that from the Egypt? Whatever.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of natives, I went to Hawaii back in 2016, and I didn't know like anything about the history of Hawaii. And I went to the Iolani Palace in Honolulu, and I learned about how we gave the people of Hawaii democracy when they didn't want it. And it obviously had nothing to do with the trade port in Pearl Harbor. But I was wondering if you could give us a little history lesson on Hawaii, Mike, on how America annexed it and took it away from the people and imprisoned the queen and the palace and all that. I thought that was an interesting story.
Oh, it's an ugly, ugly story. And as a matter of fact, if you go to whatreallyhappened.com, up in the top menu article bar, it's a little gray box. There is a link that says Hawaii, and it has the story in quite detail, including photographs. But the short version is that Hawaii had attracted quite a few Americans interested in the sugar trade. And because the measles had decimated much of the native Hawaiian population, they started importing workers from Japan, China, the Philippines, and that's where Hawaii got its Polynesian makeup. There's a little bit of everything in there. And they were brought in to be workers in the cane fields. But the owners of the cane fields were very upset because when Hawaii was a republic, the United States was charging them a tariff on the sugar being sent to the United States of America. So the owners of the sugar plantations decided they were going to arrange for Hawaii to become part of the United States so they could get out of the tariffs and make a lot more money. And that was really the motive for the overthrow of the Hawaiian kingdom, the Hawaiian Republic, and the installation of a government that was made up, you know, entirely of the Americans. In fact, at one point, the native Hawaiians were not even allowed to vote anymore. So, it's an ugly story.
Yeah. I mean, it made sense when I went out there and saw that, and that was how it all transpired. But we don't learn anything about, I mean, as Ryan talks about all the time, we don't learn anything in history class, or they don't really focus on anything important. You just kind of
tariffs get, don't exist, no. Right? Yeah. They you still had names interstate
and dates
tariffs
and places, and if you can remember them, you get an A.
Yeah, exactly.
Just repeat the stuff in the back of your book. There's they used to do interstate tariffs during Reconstruction after the Civil War, where they would do it through freight rates. So, like, oh, we're not tariffing the iron or whatever. We're just charging the rate to freight it on the railroad. But so if it comes from Alabama, you got to pay this 40% hike. But if it comes to Pennsylvania, you have no freight rate at all. So it favored northern industries. So they just taxed the South into oblivion, mm-hmm. or tariffed them or gave them freight rates, or they always had some scam to help these monopolies that were writing the laws. And that's what, like, a lot of leftists that think the Civil War is about slavery and hate the flag and all that. Yeah, I mean, it's so weird because the original crony capitalists, like the grandfather of that married state and business together, was that top hat wearing long legged stinking Lincoln. Like, if you hate crony capitalism and you don't like the state giving subsidies to businesses and stuff, well, that's Lincoln. Like, that's when the Hamiltonian vision of America took over. Because prior to that, Team Jefferson had won.
Yes.
We had freedom. We had wealth. It was working. We had gotten rid of the central banks. Lincoln started the income tax. A lot of people think that's from the Federal Reserve. It is not. The first income tax was from stinking Lincoln. He had the war bonds.
That one was overturned by the Supreme Court.
Right. And actually, the second one never should have been ratified either. But anyway, Lincoln had the war bonds paid for through, well, he sold bonds is how he paid for his war. His greenbacks didn't work. And he had the South, he was dead, but Grant implemented that the South had to pay the Northern war bonds and they had to pay it in gold.
Isn't that where lobbyist comes from too, Ryan?
The word lobbyist comes from how much Grant would meet with people in the lobbies of hotels and just, you know, take his bribes. I mean, the guy was just, fuck that guy. And he had slaves, by the way, through the entirety of the Civil War. Lee did not. You know, it's just, I wish we could just have like 10 minutes to talk about the Corcoran Amendment and stuff with every shit lib. They're taking the statue of Robert E. Lee now, and they're going to melt it down. Like, you couldn't just take it. They're going to melt it down and build something else out of it.
Somebody actually offered $100,000 to buy the statue. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, we're going to give it to this African art museum and they're going to melt it down and do something with it. I mean, that cost the city $100,000.
Yeah, they're probably going to build a statue of George Floyd pointing a gun at a pregnant lady. You know, heroes like that. You know, there's your that guy. You know, but Lee has become a symbol because of these ass clowns like Richard Spencer that go around there with their little neo-Nazi fantasies and stuff in front of the Lee statue. You know, that Nazism in World War II has nothing at all to do with the Civil War, which was many, many decades before Hitler. But they conflate the two things. It's like when Dylann Roof shot those people in South Carolina, it was because he was a racist and probably insane. But they found a picture somewhere on Facebook where he was with a Confederate flag and like, oh, that's it. It's because of that. You know, he also had Gold's Gem. He probably liked chocolate. He probably interested in a lot of things. You can't blame that on why this one guy, millions of people have Confederate flags in their room or whatever, and they're not going around shooting people and stuff. But they need a witch to burn and they hate America. They hate American history. And it did just like Trump said they would. They started taking down statues of Thomas Jefferson, Columbus, even Civil War statues because they don't know the difference, right? But there was one of A.P. Hill that, you know, fell on someone's head and put him in a coma, and I think that person eventually died. So it's like, you know, Confederate statue one, Antifa zero.
Okay. Incredible.
Yeah, it's like you pulled a statue on your own head, and you don't even know who it is, you know, and you're out there raging against Darwin Confederate Award statues because right of George Floyd.
Big old Darwin.
It is a Darwin Award. There's no connection between the Civil War and honoring veterans and police abuse in Minnesota. There was no evidence that was about race either. I mean, I agree Derek Chauvin should be in jail and shouldn't have sat on somebody for 8 minutes. They learned that from the Israelis, by the way. But it wasn't because he was black. It's because this guy's an asshole. He did that to everybody. And I guarantee you, if he had a racist past, they would have found it because, you know, they combed through every inch of Derek Chauvin's history.
Oh, yeah.
And they got nothing. They went to trial, never brought it up. But MSN, you know, or, you know, the ABC and NBC, CBS, Fox, the racial news network, they're like, George Floyd was a black man and this is a white cop. Blah, 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 blah. They did story after story after story until they got one to stick. And, you know, it's emotional because it's horrible to watch someone who's having a panic attack and dying of a drug overdose have some cop sit on his back for the last moments of his life. And because of the color of the two, the victim and the cop, they're like, aha, race crime, hate crime.
Well, speaking of racism in the corporate media, the Jesse Smollett case is rather interesting because when that was getting ready to go to trial, the corporate media was, oh, it's a racist attack. It's all. And then, of course, Jesse Smollett was convicted for, you know, hoaxing the entire thing. And now the corporate media are very quietly wiping the egg off their face.
He's right. The first American in history to scam two Nigerians.
Oh, it's incredible. Two Nigerian dudes in MAGA hats. I'd pay to recreate that.
They did
that.
A trial run of the hoax. Like,
yeah,
Saturday.
Yeah,
there's footage of that. Oh, you're on candid camera.
That story was... And
you know what? You couldn't even pull that over Trump. And when Trump first heard about it, he just said, oh, that's very unfortunate. Next question. You know, I think his bullshit meter went off. He kind of knew it was bullshit.
Like they had MAGA hats and they dumped bleach on me and they had a noose and then everybody slow clapped.
This is MAGA country.
That was so on the nose. It was like the apple a day. It was real in my imagination.
Right. What would Jesse Ventura say about it now, do you think?
I walked out there in that street. I did an investigation, and I smelled manure. I smelled bullshit instantly. I didn't believe it. That was a golf at Tonkin on the streets of Chicago.
In the Baja.
It was in the Baja.
Where I live, you know.
Yeah. We like to get a little crazy, Mike, sometimes, do some impressions. And that's how I deal with all this shit. That's what I want.
You're great. I love it, you know.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate
what would,
that.
What would Bill Clinton think about it? You think he has an opinion there?
Well, first I'd say, you know, Chicago's a great city. I raped a lot of women out there. So, you know, I've had a lot of good times there. And, you know, I hope Ghislaine doesn't spill all them beans in the trial. But, you know, Jesse Smollett's a patriot. He's a hero. And that show Empire was a big fan of Hillary's campaign. They supplied us with all kinds of girls and drugs for her campaign. So Jussie Smollett is a hero, and that was a hate crime.
Did you hear what Sean Atwood had to say?
Oh, we got Jussie Smollett at the top of the hour, where he scammed the Nigerians into the plot. It was so dastardly. But we'll be getting to that after we talk to Ryan Dawson at the top of the hour about how horrible the idea for treating the babies in Gaza. Oh!
Oh, your comedy is therapeutic.
Well, it's how we deal with it. So, I mean, what do you do, Mike, you know, outside of all this kind of stuff? Like, what are you interested in to take your mind off all the bullshit of the world?
Well, you know, it's very important to try and, you know, give oneself some distance from what's going on because the news is overwhelmingly bad. Mostly, I'm sort of producer for my music, for my wife's music, and I'm into amateur astronomy. I've been trying to build a robot for my grandniece and grandnephews to play with, but I think the robot is winning over me right now, so I don't know if it's going to get done anytime soon.
Well, the machines are becoming self-aware, Mike. We got to watch out for that. James Cameron was so right with Terminator.
He's an idiot.
Okay, he didn't get too smart. He's not like from a Cyberdyne system or General Dynamic. One of them companies, one of them spooky companies.
Nope.
Have you seen those weird robot dogs and stuff, though? That's disturbing.
That creeps me out, dude.
That's what I'm building.
Yours is going to be for peaceful means, though, because Mike Rivero is making it.
It's a lot smaller than the ones from Boston Dynamics. And, you know, it's better than having a real dog. You know, I mean, it'll leave dead batteries on the carpet, but those are easy to pick up.
You can clean those up pretty easily.
I'm building a robot dog as he sets down industrial society in its future.
Right. The dog's name is Ted.
Yeah.
Teddy the Pooch. He's a Rottweiler.
Eric, you're going to be very jealous. But somebody sent me a stocking stuffer early. This is on the back. It's a little Uncle Ted figurine.
Oh, it's cute.
Isn't that great?
Comes with shrapnel from Bell Bomb.
That's a collector's item.
He has that, you know? It's so good.
Hey, Ryan.
I got this too, and I really wanted this. I joked about this, sort of half joking, but somebody actually sent me a box of Uncle Ben's, but Uncle Ben's still there.
Oh, Jesus.
Right? Because they got rid of Uncle Ben and Mrs. Butterworth and all that. And then
you got to get the collector's edition. You got to have, like,
have you looked at the Land of Lakes?
Yeah, all that stuff.
Well, you know, I thought Land of Lakes was pretty accurate because they got rid of the Indian and kept the land.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Good meme.
That's cultural appropriation.
You know what, though? When I was buying butter, I'd always get Land of Lakes just because it had an Indian on it. And I was like, why not? Butter is butter. Right. I'm going to get this one. Because I didn't see it as a negative thing to have an Indian mascot. I thought, oh, cool. We still exist. On the butter, at least.
Keep it in the tribe, Ryan. About it, you know? Keep it in the tribe.
What does Caitlyn Jenner think about Land O'Lakes, Mark?
Well, you know, I have a lot of Indian friends out here in California, and I'll always be dad. We can celebrate Father's Day on Mother's Day. Surprise! Well,
it was an honor, though, because Land O'Lakes, the reason there's a Native American and lakes in the land is to make it feel like clean and fresh and, you know, like this is the kind of butter you want because these people wouldn't pollute it, right? That was their message. Mm-hmm. That's a positive stereotype. And I just don't see why you'd take the character down and leave the lakes on there. It's just you're bowing to the woke mob when you do that.
Yeah.
And get rid of not just Mrs. Butterworth. What was it? Aunt Jemima. They got rid of Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben.
Yes.
And they're like, well, that's a term. I was like, I had aunts and uncles who were not really my aunts and uncles. And they were not black either. I mean, that's just a Southern thing for anybody. Getting rid of Uncle Ben. Maybe, man.
So we got a super chat for $75 from P1 Dizzy. Thank you very much. Any thoughts on those still locked up from the January 6th event? Well, those who loot jewelry malls are free to walk. Loving you all here tonight, Eric. Can I get some Julia or Michael or Donald talking to Rye? I don't know. Whatever you haven't done yet, give us. Who have you not done tonight yet, Eric?
Well, no, my brother. Mike, your thoughts on the. Yeah, we'll do it after, but I want to hear your thoughts on the January thing.
Well, I think there is a deliberate program to intimidate all of the American people by the maltreatment of the people arrested during the January 6th protest, by maltreating them and being cruel to them, beating them in the prison and everything. I think the government is trying to discourage all future, protests. Personally, I don't think it's going to work. It certainly did not work with the Palestinians. And if anything, we have a saying over at whatreallyhappened.com, the fastest way to bring down a dictatorship is to force them to act like one where everybody can see it. And that's kind of where we are right now.
Yeah, always force a dictatorship to act like one. It's true.
Right.
And, I was affected by Jan 6 because one of my artists is sitting in jail. So, over nothing. I know he didn't do anything, but it is what P. Dizzy brought up. I mean, they're looting stores. There's a guy in California that priced all his items $951 and a dollar store so that you couldn't steal it, or you could actually get prosecuted if you steal it. They've lost their minds over there, but it's these George Soros appointed DAs that have decided to just look the other way to crime. I'm like, the world is run by criminals. And these people, they're looting Louis Vuitton bags and all that. I'm like, I bet you feel like a sucker if you just spent a few thousand dollars actually buying one and people just raid in there and steal it. They organize this on Facebook, by the way. Facebook does nothing about it. Mm-hmm. And they go and rob a Nordstrom's or rob a whatever, just all run in there and steal things at the same time. And that kind of looting and arson and the, annexing a piece of Seattle for months, Chaz. Or the chop, or whatever hell they named it. I love the farms they made where they took some plants out and they just dumped it on cardboard on top of some artificial topsoil. I was like, I'm starting to see why communists starve to death. if that's your farming co-op or whatever, they don't understand that that's skilled labor. Like, you can grow tomatoes in your yard, but if you're gonna grow food to scale to feed you. That is not as simple as putting a seed in the dirt and putting water on it.
It's a lot of work.
It's highly
skilled labor. It's a lot of knowledge.
It is.
That. I mean, back in Zimbabwe, they went through this whole thing where they took the farmland away from the white multi-generational farmers and they redistributed it to the black people who, because they didn't know farming, plunged the entire nation into economic hardship and food shortages. And the same thing is going to happen here. I mean, they're talking about reparations. They're talking about grabbing all the land and redistributing it to the black population. People and land are a partnership. The people who are on the land have to know how to make the land productive. You don't just hand land to people who've never farmed or anything, or you're just asking for a disaster. And we're already dealing with major food shortages right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even if they had given it to black farmers, it still would have been wrong to just confiscate people's land.
Oh, I agree.
Else.
I agree.
But they just gave it to
negative
whoever.
Consequences.
But I swear that was on purpose because, like, we're going to use this racial pretext to steal land away from, we're going to take all the agriculture away. We're going to give it to people who were not farmers, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't give it to black farmers. They just gave it to anybody. Then we're going to create a dependency state where they're going to be reliant on foreign aid for food. And then we're going to use that as leverage to say, you want to continue to get these freebies of food? Why don't you lease us this and that for 99 years and we'll take all your mineral rights away from you? And that happened with the copper mining in Zambia and then in Zimbabwe, Rhodesia, whatever you want to call it. It was worse than just taking the land. They were murdering the farmers.
Yeah.
Raping and murdering these people. You know, which at least it was illegal, but I mean, at least there were some consequences. Like some of them, when they did that, would get caught and would get prosecuted or killed. But it happened so much. In the U.S., it's just a mostly peaceful protest. They shot a man in a MAGA hat in Portland. Portland has over 1,000 homicides. Portland, 1,000 homicides. Yeah, get rid of the police. I don't like police abuse, but you know what I hate more than cops? Crooks.
Well, the other thing is you have the cops basically just running cover for the looters. Like, that's what a lot of people are missing is, like, when there's buildings on fire and cars getting flipped over and people getting shot, the cops are nowhere. And then once they're doing, like, a peaceful stand-up protest in the downtown park, then they're beating them up and shooting them with rubber bullets and shit. It's like, it's anarcho-tyranny. It's just the government is basically protecting the criminals and punishing the law-abiding. That's what we have.
The only people whose shops were left standing are the ones who stood out in front of them with guns themselves. And then everybody that relied on police lost their property.
Yep.
Skate or die.
You want to get in a Rittenhouse?
No. Hey, we got to earn that $75. Been pretty good.
For once, you know, Rittenhouse got acquitted. Jussie Smollett guilty on 5 out of 6 counts. I'm pretty confident Glenn Maxwell is going to get the book thrown at her. You know, that's what happens when the other side's allowed to talk. All these liberals are shocked that Rittenhouse didn't run around as an active shooter, shooting black people and crossing state lines like they thought. And they're shocked that Jussie Smollett actually hired actors. Like, they didn't know that whole part of the story the whole time until there's a trial, which is amazing amount of isolation, right? But they're shocked. And they're shocked because they've never heard the other side speak. Because the other side's not allowed to speak without getting banned from this woke mob on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, especially.
Mm-hmm.
And you can add Instagram because that's still Facebook.
So we talked about this briefly at the beginning, but Julian Assange, a British court did rule in favor of his extradition to the United States, and he had a stroke. I don't know. What are your thoughts on the case for Assange, Mike? You think he has any hope of ever getting out, or is he pretty much done at
this point? No, first of all, the stroke turned out to be mild, and Assange's attorneys are appealing that latest decision, so this is not over yet. But the U.S. government wants to make an example of Julian Assange so that people stop exposing U.S. government war crimes and various other secrets.
Yeah, he's getting the Mordecai Vanunu treatment.
Yeah.
You tell on the state, you go to jail. And to a lesser degree, like Edward Snowden, to a lesser degree to that, like Sybil Edmonds, to a lesser degree to that, like myself, you're losing lots of money, getting kicked off of stuff. But at least I'm not, I self-exiled. I'm already out of the country. But like, you know, the more you push, the more you're flirting with getting thrown in prison. And they'll just come up with some fake rape charges or hacking charge. None of these went through. He's been exonerated from all these things, so why are they holding him?
At my age, they're going to accuse me of sexual crimes, right?
Yeah. They still would.
if they want to make the jury laugh, you know, I mean, you know, juries can use a good joke.
Well, they, you know, one of their main sources of propaganda was this con artist from Iceland, Sorensen, I think his name, Thorsten, I can't say his name, admitted he made it all up. He's like, yeah, I mean, they kind of incentivized him to lie, and he did, and now he's admitting, and that was one of their main witnesses against Assange, and it doesn't matter. And then you had people like Pompeo that wanted to kill him.
Yes.
And that was on the behest of Sheldon Adelson.
Adelson was, funding that operation.
And he's now dead.
Yeah.
That's on the calendar.
That's a white
note. Yeah, every time a neocon dies, we add him to our calendar as a holiday.
It's incredible.
We got Danny John McCain. Shulman. The 25th of every month is the month anniversary. Yeah. August 25th is when he kicked the bucket. But
okay.
You know, and then if it's a good guy like a Justin Raimondo or whatever, I put their birthday as a holiday. So all the Chads, although I'd like to replace the word Chad with Kyle. Like, we should have after Rittenhouse, we'd be like, that's Kyle. All right. Or that's good level. But yeah, their birthdays are on there with Rainbow Frog. And then, you know, I'm still waiting, like, with ink for Kissinger to go. Like, whenever that day comes, there's a, you know, there's a When Does Kissinger Die website where people are making bets.
No, I didn't.
That's yeah, amazing. It's like the Kissinger death.
It's like fantasy football for Kissinger
death. Yeah, yeah. What is it called? The Kissinger death something.
The death total pool.
Yeah, death pool. That's something amazing. Like that. And you can pick a day, bet a dollar, bet $5, whatever. And there's quite a sum. And, you know, you got a 1 in 365 chance. So, yeah. Yeah. Pick a, go ahead and enter the Kissinger death lottery or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
That guy has seen so many administrations and he's been evil in all of them. But yes. You know what? He seems almost mild compared to the new crop of weirdos. You know, even Kissinger's like, no, we don't need a war with Russia. Like, wow. It's weird because people who used to be absolutely crazy, like Ann Coulter, are now reasonable. Like, yeah. That's dark times when Ann Coulter is the good one. You know, yeah,
she's the North Star.
Like, yeah, be a total. I remember when she said that a little radiation is good for you right after the Fukushima meltdown.
Fukushima radiation is good for you.
You glow in the dark. You know, you can find your socks.
You glow in the dark. You could join the CIA.
You know, Trump went after it one time. You know, I did. I went after Ann Coulter one time, and I grabbed her by the pussy, but there was a big, huge schlong down there. There was. There was.
Tacky.
Mitchell. All right. Well, we're coming up on 2 hours here. It's been a great show, but I'll just go around, as we always do, let everyone drop any plugs, anything they got interesting coming up. But, Eric, I think you've covered all the impersonations tonight, but just give us give us another one, whoever's on your mind.
I think we did them all pretty good, but I did Michael Jackson recently saying that I would never hurt a child. Okay, I love children. Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, innocent. Yoo-hoo! But yeah, follow me on Twitter.
I think he was Radio. Innocent.
That's for another Four Horsemen. We will That's something we'll do. That's something we'll
do
on
Cosby Rumble. Was innocent too. I think Michael and Cosby were innocent.
Way too based for YouTube. But for Mike, thanks for coming on. It's been awesome talking to you. And you know, I've been a big fan of yours for a while. So this was a cool opportunity. But yeah, my YouTube channel is Jackman Radio, and Twitter is at Jackman Radio, and on Instagram you can follow me at Jackman Radio, and Senator Jackman's my account. So come there and say hi. And this has been a great time, and Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everybody.
Ryan?
I'm banned on everything. I got a Substack and a Telegram. What else do I have left? I have Raina Kawa on YouTube, but I have to delete the video as soon as I'm done, because if I leave it there, I'll get a strike. But really, you should just go to whatreallyhappened.com. I post on there sometimes too. That's Mike's site. And without Mike Rivero, nobody would have noticed me, I don't think. It didn't matter what I wrote or how accurate it was. I did not have a means of distribution until whatreallyhappened.com. Well, and he's done that for a lot of people.
I appreciate you saying that, but on the other hand, I noticed you first. And
yeah, you're good at digging up that stuff then. I don't know how you found me.
Well, I did, you know, and that's why I invited you onto the website. So, you know, I don't want to act like I made Ryan Dawson. I certainly celebrate him. But you were already making waves out there, and I got wind of you, and I, you know, brought you over to What Really Happened and so forth and so on.
Well, yeah, I think before my MySpace was deleted, I was reaching people with that, but that got canned, and a guy named Robert Larson had me on his radio show, and I had a forum. I kept writing his stuff. Mike noticed me somehow, but when I got on whatreallyhappened.com, like, we got a lot more traffic, and I got credit for what I was doing and noticed by a lot of other people, including
that's always a good outcome.
Yep. And that, I think there's a lot of people that has been their outfit of posting somewhere like whatreallyhappened.com, and then people go, you know, they notice that same person two or three times. They go, oh, who is this? I want to follow them around. when I got a YouTube, I was able to really explode on my own. But then, you know, they took that away too.
Yeah.
Sucks. But whatreallyhappened.com. And my website is the ANC report. It's the anti-neocon report. ANCReport.com. We got all our stuff on there. And we've got a new map. It's the 9/11 anthrax timeline. And so that's there. There's the Epstein map and there's the Biden crime family. Great stocking stuffers. You know, send it to your shitlib friends. Watch their head explode. You know, get a Ted Kaczynski doll.
Fucking incredible.
You know, we're working on a Kyle Rittenhouse doll. You know, he's got both biceps, unlike somebody.
All right, Mike. I know
you bare arms, but only left side.
I know you said your PayPal's been removed. So where can people keep up with you and how can they help support you now?
Well, my website is whatreallyhappened.com. We've been running it in different forms for 28 years now. And at the top of the page, there is a link to a GoFundMe, which we're going to use until we find some other kind of a payment system. I also do a talk radio show Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And you can listen to that at the website at republicbroadcasting.org, along with a link that appears at my website when the show is live. We also have a video feed.
All right. Well, I want to thank all you guys for doing this. This is another amazing episode. Next month, we have James Corbett as our fourth horseman on January 16th. So make sure everyone tunes in for that. Ryan,
we're just going to speak Japanese to each other and ignore you guys. No, I'm just kidding.
On Wednesday, I have Larry Sharp on the show. And then on Sunday next week, I have Maria Farmer coming on the show. She's an Epstein victim and Maxwell victim. She reported him to the FBI back in 1996. And the FBI has lied about it, saying that she never did it. So make sure you tune in for that. That's going to be interesting. But Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
On the next live stream.
Peace.
Peace. Love your